My name is Rachel White, and people call me the skeptical shaman. They say it like it's a contradiction, but it's not. For more than a decade, I've been researching and building tools for the spiritually homeless. You know, the curious but critical thinking people that, like me, have had a tough time navigating a landscape of gurus and grifters and crystal hippie people. Searching for a way to fill what Neil Gaiman called that God-shaped hole. All while, of course, not getting taken. As the host of the Skeptical Shaman podcast, I want to help us all develop a map of this confusing terrain. I'm going to talk to everybody, the curious, the skeptical, the cynical, and yes, even the true believers. Together, we can safely explore the world of woo and get closer to some meaningful existential truths. This is the Skeptical Shaman. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you feeling stuck, frustrated, or disconnected in the humdrum of everyday life, wondering where all the magic went? Is there an ancient Sumerian demon whispering Zul from inside your refrigerator, leaving you with a palpable sense of looming dread every night? Are eldritch terrors acting up and gazing back at you from the void? Well, the Totem Tarot deck might be right for you. One shuffle of these magical cards can transport you to a realm of unending adventure, providing crucial breadcrumbs as you navigate the strange and inevitable spiritual scavenger hunt of life. Purchase the Totem Tarot pack from Etsy or Amazon, then just unwrap, shuffle, and watch as the high strangeness grows from within your daily life. The Totem Tarot deck, what's your totem? Disclaimer. The Totem Tarot deck is connected to an ancient source of otherworldly metaphysical power. If you use the Totem Tarot deck, you understand that you may experience dimensional drift. Use responsibly.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Skeptical Shaman podcast. This is going to be another one of those solo episodes I warned you all about. So if you don't want to listen to my business of woo drivel, hit the eject button now. Go be free range. Go about your day. Wander aimlessly and freely all across the planet at will. If you do, however, want to dig into the business of woo, this is it. This is the place to be. And in this episode, I want to talk about branding, which is one of the most, it's up there with empath in terms of misused, overused, misunderstood words in the English lexicon, particularly when it comes to woo-based businesses and content. So in my career, both at Totem, you know, working with coaching clients and in corporate, I've probably worked on, I did some rough math on a piece of paper looking at LinkedIn and some other stuff. I've probably done in excess of 60 brands. And by done, I mean the full sort of spectrum of either helping to shepherd that brand through for other people, or being the originator, you know, author, pure 100% creator of said brand. So I'm not a graphic designer, as many of you know, but I do work with graphic designers on that. So when I say I'm responsible for those brands, I'm obviously not responsible for all the visual elements in a vacuum. What is a brand? Maybe we level set on that before I get going any further. A brand, despite, you know, what you've been told on Instagram and the myths filling up the space with nonsense noise, it is not a logo. Logo and brand are not synonyms. The logo is one piece of a brand. So the way I define a brand is a visual narrative and behavioral set of parameters for your business. Those last two bits, narrative and behavioral, I think are even more important than the visual aspect, but they're all really important. Now, within the visual aspect is your logo, or what's also called the device. So if you apply for a trademark, they're going to say, we need to see the device in use. What they mean by that is the logo, device, the brand mark. And that's your logo. Now, the narrative and behavioral parameters, this is where things get squishy, but they shouldn't. And it's honestly easier than you think. It's just a set of like, who am I really? Who am I in the space? What makes me different? You know, makes me, where am I plugging into this marketplace or this ecosystem? And, you know, as a part of that, it's, I'll just use myself as an example because I can. The Skeptical Shaman as a podcast aligns with the brand of Totem Readings. Why? Well, because Narratively, I swear it's the way I would speak to any client or any collaborator, honestly, whether it's recorded or not. And then, you know, in terms of the behavioral piece of it, I am skeptical. I do call bullshit. I do believe in the messy middle of, you know, being skeptical but curious, being spiritual but not vulnerable, you know, and all of the above. So finding things that reinforce, quote, the brand in the marketplace. What are your brand attributes? What are you known for? And obviously, this is never going to encapsulate all of you. In Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act, he talks about that. He goes, you know, why is everybody so concerned with everything being true to you? You know, there's one you at work. There's a you that walks the dog. There's a you that's at home with your spouse and your family. You know, trying to force and white knuckle this intense cohesion instead of just doing the work and being playful and joyful, it's the wrong way to go about brand development. And to that end, there's a quote from his book that I think everyone needs to bear in mind when developing a brand, especially a woo-based brand, and especially right now. You'll see all kinds of things out there about like being authentically who you are, simply being who you are, you know, being sincere, da, 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 and this sort of almost like drumbeat march to some destination around branding. And a lot of life coaches, business coaches, you know, frankly, between you and I, things, players in the middle that do nonsense and say nonsense words and have never had a successful business or worked at a successful company in their lives, kind of, they just spit this stuff out at you. Rick Rubin really turns that on his head. And I like this. I'm going to read you this quote from his book. When a work presents itself as sincere, it can be seen as saccharine. Sweetness made small, a hollow rhyme in a greeting card. And when I read that couple of lines in his book, it really hit home. It's like, this is why I hate the brands that I hate. They are trying to do this thing that just reads as trite drivel. There's nothing evocative. There's nothing inspiring or mysterious about it. It very much feels like, you know, almost like a weird little internal team building exercise at a giant corporation. Like, my brand is unreliable. It's like, okay. It's just, thank God Rick Rubin agrees with me on this topic. And as someone who's created a lot of brands, I think, you know, he and I might have the winning point of view. Let's just put it that way. And the other thing about these hollow rhymes and greeting cards, if you will, using his languages, there's two aspects that I really don't like about it. One is it always feels like a cynical ploy to take advantage of people's emotional and or psychological vulnerabilities. And to kind of, it's like an ingratiating scheme. Like, oh, we're so much alike. And, you know, I'm just out here trying to be authentically me. And I'm going to help you be authentically you. And we're all just going to simply be. And you are enough the way you are, the way God made you. You're perfect. Like that kind of regressive, kind of infantilized nonsense. It's not really what creates an evocative brand, number one. And then the second piece of it is you'll see brands that you know are designed to kind of appeal to what we would call lowest common denominator. And I don't mean that in terms of judging groups of people. I mean, judging more their lowest impulses, right? And scooping them up. And maybe those people are a little bit more vulnerable, you know, cognitively or emotionally, where they're at in life financially. It just feels very exploitative to me. And it feels like the soft bigotry of low expectations, which if you haven't heard that phrase before, Obama said it in a speech. It was really quite brilliant. And it resonated with me. There is sort of a patronizing tone to a lot of what I see in the marketplace where it's soft bigotry and it's low expectations and kind of creating a very commoditized version of what is frankly, you know, existential spiritual stuff in the world of woo. This isn't a widget. It isn't a coloring book. It isn't, you know, of room spray so that you can have a new lemon scented you. I just think all of that is the soft bigotry of low expectations. That's what I have to say about that. And so when we're getting into brand work, what I would say is it is important for it to be authentic to you, but that's not like something you're going to be able to achieve with a simple business brand logo instead of even brand behaviors. It should your business should have a lot in common with you. It should reflect your nature. But more than anything, it should be about the work you do and the work you're obsessed with. So to that end, you know, I'll use Totem as an example. Totem Readings is a spiritual practice. And our little tagline, if you will, our mission statement is, we seek to democratize spirituality and to serve what I have termed the spiritually homeless, right? Like that's my work. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. That's not who I am in my entirety. There's, you know, like any other human being, I'm multifaceted, hopefully. Otherwise, you know, you have other problems and it's probably cluster B personality disorder, frankly speaking. So letting that be, you know, I always think of things as like animals and what terrarium or habit trail it needs. You know, Totem Readings needs a little habit trail, needs a little ecosystem it can live in. But that little animal isn't all the animals in my life for all the pieces of me that it doesn't reflect all of me and it shouldn't. So don't boil the ocean with this. I think a lot of times if you're trying to create a brand that appeals to everyone, it's going to end up appealing to no one. Kind of milk toast, limp noodle, white bread, mayonnaise sandwich shit, right? So, you know, what's a better set of questions is what do you do? What's exciting about it? What sets it apart? And in that space too, you know, as you're developing your brand, it's really important to do something called a differentiation exercise. And differentiation is another word up there with empath and brand, misused, overused. I mean, where are the misinformation and malinformation police when it comes to this nonsense on Instagram? You don't see them around, but my God, they yell at people who talk about, you know, the healing properties of herbs, right? It's kind of funny. But your differentiator or differentiators, there's a very specific definition to this. And I did my first differentiation workshop at a corporate real estate firm when I was 20 years old. And I was really, really lucky to be in that room. And it was CEOs of what they call business units, which are effectively businesses within a company with their own profit and loss center, which is also called a P&L. So if you ever hear these terms, these are real business terms, unlike some of the other fugazi nonsense that you see on Instagram. And in that workshop, I learned very specifically that a differentiator is a first, a best, or an only statement, right? So when you're thinking through who am I, how am I different, am I first at something? Am I best at something? Am I only at something? And depending on who you are, where you're located, your business model, and by the way, your unique background, your skill set, your knowledge base, all that stuff, you know, the emphasis on one of those three, it could really vary, right? So with Totem, since the beginning, my approach was like, I'm a normal person. Well, that's, by the way, if I ever said a lie out loud, I just heard myself say that. I'm like, you're not fucking normal. Knock it off. But within reason, right? Like, I'm kind of a muggle. I live in the real world with my clients. I work a real job. I have for a long time. I understand that, you know, spiritual shit, shaman stuff, whatever this is, even just simply a tarot reading, it needs to be pragmatically useful for a normal person in their everyday life. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, are we all going to join monasteries up in the mountains? I don't really want to do that. And I don't want my only clients to be other practitioners, which, by the way, is a kind of a thing that plagues some other woo-based businesses. I want to work with people of all backgrounds, walks of life, geographic locations, income earning levels, like all of the, I want to work with everybody across gender and race. And I want them to be real people and I want them to ask me real questions. So that was always sort of where I focused. That was my differentiator is, you know, I'm not the crystal hippie lady. I'm skeptical and I'm a shaman. And that paradoxical statement is sort of my only statement and the best first only. So I would suggest, you know, before you get going on logos or what colors you like, thinking through some of that, thinking through your background. A lot of us take for granted that our background is unique. Like we don't notice it. We don't see it objectively because we've lived it. So one of the things I try to do with the coaching clients I work with that want to launch a woo-based business or even like just a regular HR recruiting business or, you know, a coach to help people get hired, rewriting their resumes, starting financial literacy podcasts. It doesn't really matter as long as it's aligned and it's missional. I'm happy to help them and show them woo tools to help them along the way. But the first thing we do is kind of look at their background. And I'll say to them, you know, you have a lot of skills that other people don't have, or you're really an expert in this and you should emphasize this. And they go, well, it doesn't really make me an expert, you know, and you'll start to hear those bubbles of imposter syndrome, but they are. And, you know, just looking at some of that with a fresh set of eyes, and do I have a first, a best, or an only statement, and kind of running with that. Now, for the visual piece of the Totem brand, we wanted to differentiate ourselves further, and it's why we use a lot of black, and a very specific black that's sort of got warm brown in it. And we don't use a lot of what I would call standard woo cliches or new age cliches. So when you come to my website, you're not going to see a dream catcher. You're not going to see a feather. You're not going to see a heart. You're not going to see a crystal or a flower of life, sacred geometry symbol. And there's nothing wrong with these things. These things are beautiful. I know people who have used these in their brands before, but it's so done at this point. I remember when I was working at Deloitte, we had a rule, no cliches. So on the cover of a proposal or a report or whatever, no handshakes, no globes, no key going in the lock, no compass, no, you know, just like in corporate, in woo, there are cliches, right? And trying to avoid those will make you more, it'll help you stand out and seem more authentic, frankly, and not as commoditized as the rest of your compatriots. Another big part of developing a brand is competitive analysis, which is always sort of a sister but not twin to differentiation. And I don't look at my marketplace as being full of competitors. I really do think, by the way, this market is largely untapped. There's room for everyone. It's a feast, not a famine. I prefer to share work, refer people to other practitioners. That's how I operate. But for the purposes of like a brand development exercise, looking at what's already out there and going, okay, well, what's missing? And the what's missing is sort of that hole, right? And what part of you can fill that missing piece sincerely and honestly, and trying to plug that in. And for me, you know, the missing piece was the same thing as the differentiator, which is, you know, in Chicago, at least, where I started my business and ran it for 10 years before moving, it's a lot of fortune tellers who sit in a retail space waiting for walk-ins. They have the neon sign, right? And then they get their hooks into you and they tell you have a curse or you have a blockage and they need a couple of $1,000s and whatever. So there's that fortune teller piece of the market. And then there's kind of the crystal hippie yoga people part of the market. And a lot of my clients and my friends, and frankly me, I would never go to one of those people because, you know, what is the practical use of learning that my aura looks blue versus pink? Or if you see names around me or, you know, that in a past life I was, you know, JFK or something. Like, I always ask the, what's the so what? Then what? What's the return on my investment? What am I able to get that I could put to action and operationalize in my life? So that's where I decided to sit, was with people like me. I can speak to them because I am them, and that's who I want to serve. And then when you get to logo and brand, if you've done all these other things, the logo and brand kind of create themselves because you're like, oh, I get it. So this is the look, feel I want. This is the vibe I want. These are our behavioral parameters, our narrative parameters, our tone, this, that, the other. And then the visual identity really comes out of that. And in my experience, both in corporate and with woo-based businesses, a logo should be simple and memorable, meaning like intriguing. It should pull people in. And the other thing it should be, and this sounds paradoxical, is it should be specific and general. So again, I'll just use Totem as an example. Not that it's the best brand, but it's the one I'm able to talk about without getting people to waive NDAs and things like that I've worked with. So Totem is it's specific and general. Totem, people have a general idea of what a totem pole is or a totem animal, right? So that word totem has a feeling to it that people loosely associate with Native American beliefs, and I am Native American in part, and or just that space, right? So you've already created like a, oh yeah, it's specific to totem animals, totem poles, Native Americans. Like you're getting that shaman vibe without saying shamanism in the title, the name, the logo. And in terms of it being general though, a totem could be anything. You know, like your totem animal could be a lion or it could be an eagle or it could be a chess piece. So it's specific and general, and hopefully it's memorable and intriguing. People who see it, especially the vertical version of it, which I don't have on my website, it kind of vaguely architecturally looks like a totem pole. It's very intriguing to people. People have asked me over and over and over again, why this name? And, you know, between you and I'm not that stoked to talk about it usually because it's during a client session. Like, can we get back to your Akashic records, please? Like, you know, mainly because it's a long conversation. And it's also not that interesting to me. I've been at this 15 years now. So in terms of doing this, the other big, big thing to remember is don't copy anybody. Let's say you love somebody's brand. You think they are crushing it. The minute you try to copy the brand, the logo, the tone, the behaviors, you've already lost the plot because they're crushing it because that's their thing. So you need to find your thing and crush it in your space. Another thing a brand does that a lot of people don't think of is, at least in my experience, it serves as a go, no-go criteria, or what I also call a stage gate or guardian at the gate. So you go to my website, things are dark. There's a lot of black. It says totem. It lists these services. It's straightforward. It doesn't say namaste, love and light. Welcome, starseed. Oh, are you a light worker? Like, none of that shit's there, right? So if someone wants that, they're not going to find it on my website. So I'm already weeding out people that may not be in alignment with me and my brand, right? So in that way, it's a guardian at the gate. The other thing is I really stick to my scope of services, which is a part of the pledge I took called the Seek Safely Pledge. Seek Safely is an organization that came out of the tragedy around James Arthur Ray's disastrous sweat lodge in which people died. If you want to learn about that, there's a really good podcast from Wondery called The Guru. And of course, Oprah endorsed him. Side note, she's got a hell of a track record between, you know, James Arthur Ray, John of God, and other just felons, for want of a better way of putting it. I'm being very generous there. But the Seek Safely pledge I took, number one, it reinforces my brand behaviors. And it's something that I feel inspired by. And part of that pledge is I'm ethical and transparent, and I stick to my scope of services. So one thing Totem doesn't do and I don't do is I am not around to kind of, for want of a better way of putting it, psychologically treat you. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not, you know, any kind of an expert in any of these areas, right? And also, I'm not here to kind of emotionally blow you. And that might sound rough, but to me, the real kindness or the value add of what I do is in democratizing people's data and giving them their own spiritual data, empowering them so they can make better choices through free will and navigate life with more confidence in themselves and, you know, in their relationship with spirit, for want of a better way of putting it. It's not about making them feel better. If I can make them feel better, that's great. But I made a choice very early on that I was going to just read the cards. I was just going to give the message from someone's deceased loved one or spirit guide or whatever came up from their Akashic records, that I was just going to do the work. And I had a woman who trained me early on, specifically in mediumship, but I think this piece of advice transcends a service type. And she said, if you edit the message that comes through from spirit before you give it to the client, you are interfering with their karma. And she said, and what that is basically you being selfish, you wanting to be a good guy, you wanting to make them feel good because that makes you feel good and everybody's happy, right? But that's not the right thing to do. And ultimately, it may not be the kind thing to do because you have no idea what you're interfering with by bullshitting and kind of like softening all of this and frankly, rewording it. It's not for me to reword. While at times that can be hard in client sessions, I think it's, again, a thing that it's a behavior that reinforces my brand. And you may not, if you book a one-on-one session with me, for instance, you may not always hear what you want to hear. There might be things that are there that surprise you. But hopefully, if I did my job, I've armed you with information, a bit of a map, if you will, to help you navigate on foot the lived terrain in front of you. And I've had people, you know, where it's not great news or bad things come up. Generally, people know what it is, too. And they'll cry a little bit, be like, yeah, I fucking know what that is. It's awful. It sucks. But because they were prepared and I didn't lie or edit or whatever, as the human with my human selfishness and impulses, I just did the work. they'll come back to me 6 months, a year, several years later. And they continue to book and they send their friends. Because that's what the service is supposed to be. It's clearly defined scope. And those are also people I want to work with. That's how if I pull nasty, gnarly cards in a tarot card reading for myself, a part of me goes, shit, right? You know, and I've been there, trust me. I'll never forget, I had a workshop in person in Chicago at my meditation center. And we were all practicing reading tarot cards on each other. And one of my clients brought her sister, and her sister, of course, got paired up with me, which everyone found that intimidating, but I am the easiest practice client you ever meet. I'm just having fun and happy to be there. But she pulled cards and I looked at them and I go, who the hell's going to sue me? I'll never forget it. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get sued? ? And the answer is yes, period, not ? And I was a whistleblower with a corporation that I thought was doing unethical and illegal and frankly dangerous things. And I had reported them to the city and other agencies. They didn't like that. And so to start negotiating with me and ultimately settle with me in a way I can't talk about because it's part of the settlement agreement, but let's just say I did fine. They decided to sue me because they thought it was going to intimidate me. Now, that reading, you know, this woman who pulled those cards, she goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I go, no, you didn't do this. This is my data. And I'd rather know and get ready. And thank God I had that attitude because when things happen, I go, I know what this is. But I also knew that's not where it ended. And I knew the settlement was going to work out just fine for me. So that's kind of how this all comes together. And, you know, when you start to stretch or bend these brand behaviors or brandisms, or let's say you have a slow week or month or quarter, and you're like, oh, well, everybody really likes DNA activation. And everybody's talking about light codes and people seem to be making money doing that. And you bring it in based on that, you have just basically put a grenade in your own brand. That bitch is going to go off eventually. You know, the pin might be pulled out or not, but you're now sitting among a lot. You're making a minefield for yourself, and it's out of alignment with who you are and what you're about and what you want to do. And you only did it because you saw it was popular and you want to make some money. It's a literal ticking time bomb for your brand. And so just remembering brand behaviors is like I'm going to take a short-term loss today, but I'm going to reap the benefits of the long-term investment I'm making and the consistency that I'm exhibiting with regard to my brand. It might be a little bit slower this way to get some wins, but those wins cannot be easily taken from you, and it doesn't cause other goddamn problems, by the way. A big part of brand work is risk mitigation and thinking through who you want to work with, how, why, when, and what you don't want in your orbit. And I personally don't want bullshit. I don't want weird grifter people. I don't want to go to weird conferences with them. It's just not for me. So my brand reflects that. And if it's alienating to some, it's probably for the best, by the way. And if you're in the marketplace, you're looking for someone to help you out with a brand. You do not have to work with me and the designers I work with. Trust me, I don't even think we'll have capacity with all the shit going on at Totem. We've got two decks underway and coaching clients already working with these designers and things like that, but things to look for. So I was approached by someone who has, quote, a PR company, which it wasn't PR. As someone who's worked in corporate, public relations is a very specific thing, and there are people that are expert at it, and it's a very distinct animal. It's very separate from things like marketing and business development, by the way. It's like a Pegasus. It's a different animal altogether. But they approached me and they wanted to pitch me as a client. And they're like, we want to work with you. And so I said, sure, let's have this conversation. I'm curious. I'm learning. I'm in data gathering mode. And I did. And it was shocking. It's shocking what people are selling out there, the shit they're shoveling. One thing is everybody who approached me said, we'll help you with your brand. And I go, I have a brand. I have brand guidelines. I have a logo. I have a trademark. I have an LLC. Like, so, you know, I don't need that. I don't want that. I do brand work. And they were like, oh, really? I was like, yeah. So number one, you didn't do research on who you're pitching to. And you're not talking to me about the appropriate solution for my business. So I'm already seeing there's maybe a bit of a one size fits all kind of griftery approach. Just, you know, big boys and girls at PR agencies, ad agencies, when they come to a meeting with you, they've done research on your company and your brand behaviors. And they don't talk to you about shit you don't need. Side note, at least not in that first meeting. The next thing that kind of blew me away, was the ambiguity around what was advisory services versus what were tactical, like execution services. And by this, I mean, I and my stage in the game, you know, maybe I could use a little brand advice. Maybe I could use a little social media advice. But generally speaking, as a company of one who's fairly, I'm fairly capable, I need people to do shit for me, like not sit around and tell me things. Like that's not that useful to me with my day and scarcity of time already. And when I asked this one sort of group, which of these services that you're outlining on this slide I'm looking at are things your team executes versus things I execute, they couldn't answer the question. So that's a big red flag. And that's pretty common. So when you're out shopping, just be like, I really want to see clearly your scope of services. And I'll give you a little phrase you can use, deliverables. What are your deliverables to be? It's one of those corporate isms that actually means something. The other thing that blew me away about the specific presentation was the cost. So a bit of background, when I was at various multinational publicly traded companies, we engage PR companies, brand companies, you know, advertising companies all the time, out of house. And we worked with them on various, you know, technology stacks, new product launches, new service launches, brand refreshes, whatever, right? Like when Cushman went IPO, we even hired Saatchi & Saatchi to do the whole brand refresh. And they have a series of art galleries and an online art gallery. So it's all over the place, right? They, by the way, did a nice job. I was really impressed. That red was a beautiful, bright coral red. But I've hired a lot of these companies and I know what they do and what they don't do and what they should be delivering or not. And most importantly, what they should be charging you. In this small boutique, you know, PR company, squishy, whatever will help you with a brand you don't need, want to charge me well into six figures, which is bonkers. So I've hired and worked with McCann Erickson, DDB, Leo Burnett, like real global Mad Men era, side note, Mad Men era actual advertising PR firms, right? They don't charge six figures for anything unless you're doing something at the scale of Nike doing a full rebrand globally. So I want you to think about that scale, right? It's wild. It's wild that they're charging people this. And when I balked at it, you know, there was sort of a statement of like, well, you know, you get what you pay for. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that. But also, this is hilarious. And, you know, trying to make the conversation more constructive instead of like laughing in their face, I said, what would be my mechanism? Because you understand my business so well. You keep saying that. You understand me so well. What would be my mechanism for recapturing that return on investment? So in other words, I spend six figures with you. How do I make six figures to pay for that investment? Where does that come from? I said right now, if I worked and did client services all day, every single day for the rest of the year, let's say you generated that kind of demand, I wouldn't make that money back for years. So I'm not spending money I can't capture back on the back end of anything. You shouldn't spend money that isn't going to make you money. It's wild. And I remember for days I was really fixated on this. And I even asked them for proof points of people like who recaptured this six-figure investment and how, right? Like, did they get a book deal where they got, I don't know, $300,000 or $400,000 advance, which just so you guys know is not the norm. It's not usually that much unless you're, you know, Condoleezza Rice or something. So there's that. Like, how do they do it? Are their businesses so different from mine? Are they doctors? I don't know. Are they fucking rocket scientists? Is Elon Musk a client? Because he can recapture that investment. I can't. Never got it back. Never got any quantitative, meaning objective, rational, numeric-based proof points. It was a lot of like, they liked us. And we helped them build social media eminence, which just so you guys know, doesn't translate to dick anymore. There was a golden era when you could be an influencer on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, make that, monetize that, make money. That's not the case anymore. Those days have long passed. And influencers are saying that, including there's a famous one named, I'm not saying this myself, this is his name, The Fat Jewish. He's rather famous. He had a dog named Toast who was an influencer. It was a very cute dog. And he started making wine, and tip of the hat to him, he made White Girl Rosé. And I quote, because the day of the influencer is gone, it's time to start making and selling real So out of the mouths of influencers. And so I was like, who is paying this exorbitant rate for, quote, a brand, whatever that means, a social media strategy, whatever that means, an eminence bill? Like, who's paying this? And I realized people who don't come from a background where they've directly worked with and negotiated rates and contracts with ad companies that are real ad companies. So they just, I'm not saying they're stupid, I'm saying they're ignorant maybe of how that world works, how much it should cost. And if it's a gray market, opaque market, and you're not familiar with it, how would you know B2B what that should look like cost-wise? And then there's another aspect, which is the hopium piece, or what they call in sales, or, you know, frankly, cult indoctrination, the lift, right? So you're seeing this person who sells these services and they seem to live an enchanted life. They're on yachts, they're in Costa Rica doing ketamine, they're buying farms in Idaho or whatever the fuck they're doing on social media, which, by the way, is not real life. You have no idea what you're looking at. You have no idea what's owned, borrowed, loaned, debt, profit. You have no idea how the math or the reality of that shakes out. So you're seeing this lifestyle and you go, okay, this person has hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers. They have this lifestyle. If I hire them, I'm going to gain access to those things. I'm going to basically skip the queue. I'm going to leapfrog and I'm going to become them. Bullshit. You will not. And by the way, they're not even that. You know, I work with some of those people spiritually, and I'm obviously not going to get into specifics, but it's not what it looks like. They're miserable. They all can't wait to just get a deal or get a something or figure something out and get out of it. So number one, it's not fun. And then number two, it's all debt. A lot of people go into debt to facilitate the appearance of a certain lifestyle on social media. And I wish I was kidding about that, but that's a very true thing. And I'm just allergic to debt. I don't like carrying debt, especially in times of inflation. So, you know, I mean, I have a chicken coop in an organic garden. That's like the market I play in right now when economic times are tough. And then I think the last reason why people paid six figures without being able to create any way to recapture six-figure investment in a brand or whatever the hell was going on is vanity. I think in woo businesses, the business of woo, people really want to be seen as a spiritual guru, an expert, a leader, a healer, a light worker. Like, they want that for themselves. This is an ephemeral, vision boardy kind of thing that they want. They want to wrap themselves in that quote valor. Trust me, I don't view it that way, but I think some people do. And they think that this is going to be the thing that changes their whole life. They're going to get on, you know, whatever the new version of Oprah is. They're going to get a book deal. They're going to, whatever it is. There's a fantasy vanity component to this, and wanting to be top dog, wanting to be somewhat famous or influential. And sometimes too, wanting to be seen and wanting to be rich. They want to be rich. Those are not good motivations to be listening to and indulging when spending six figures of money. So I'll tell you, as someone who's been through many, many sales trainings, including, by the way, with the guy from The Wolf of Wall Street, M. Carl Rove. Side note, but, you know, evil guys are good at sales. Evil guys and gals are good at sales, right? And they talk about how you'd think the bigger the dollar amount, the more people are going to get into the minutiae and the facts and get objective. It's actually the inverse. So the bigger the dollar amount, the more pressing, the more important, the more whatever career making, you know, life making, the more emotional the decision becomes. And they rely on their own psychological, whatever, you know, I was picked on as a kid. People didn't think I was cool or whatever it is. And that's how they swing that. And so, you know, people in the space trying to sell you expensive shit you don't need, they're going to exploit those vulnerabilities in you, whether it's vanity or it's fear or it's hope or it's despair. They're gonna play with those dials, and they know how to push those buttons. So not a good thing to do. I will tell you, you can do your brand on your own. You may need a little bit of outside help, or maybe you have a friend you want to run things by, or it could be a process of trial and error, as is everything too. You know, every brand is trial and error. It should be evolving here and there while maintaining its inherent consistency. So if there's no real magic to it. I obviously try to help clients with this stuff, but a lot of the times, 98% of it is they go, oh my God, that's right. You know, that's what I was thinking. It's like, yeah, you can do this on your own. You can do this on your own.
you need a couple of things to help. You need to go to like LegalZoom or a lawyer to try and secure a trademark. When you apply for a trademark, you're going to need a logo or what's called the brand mark, right? So you need a graphic designer to generate a logo, one or two. And you'll also need a website or, quote, examples of the mark in use. So a landing page of a website. That's kind of it. And brand guidelines in terms of fonts and colors and all that, you can hire a designer to do that. And, you know, in my space, I connect people with designers. They charge no more than $30 to $40 an hour. Everybody gets in and out with all the things I just said, plus like a domain, meaning a website address, for about $500 all in. $500 is a little bit different than six figures, right? So when you look at things and you break up their parts and you really start assessing how much should each of these things cost, six figures is absurd. And P.S., I've seen the output from that particular group, and I'm not here to, you know, cast aspersions, though I am an aspersion caster and a noted heretic and thought criminal. But it's not great. You know, the thing that struck me about it was this Rick Rubin quote, which was, when a work presents itself as sincere, it can be seen as saccharine. Sweetness made small, a hollow rhyme in a greeting card. And frankly, a lot of them always initially resonate with me as like a feminine hygiene product brand or something, where I'm like, are you selling tampons? Or is this like supplements for hormonal shifts during menopause? Like a lot of it just has had that vibe to me, which, you know, in my opinion, it's not great. I certainly wouldn't want to work with people whose brand reminded me of Summer's Eve, if you will. So it's my two cents on brand differentiation, all of that. When you pull all this stuff together, your competitive positioning, differentiation, your brand, full brand, not just logo, then what you kind of have is the beginning of what we call a go-to-market kit, GTM, go to market. You're building all of your bits and pieces. And from there, it's just things like defining your services, maybe writing some website copy. Everything else flows really quickly and easily once you get this thing handled. So my other big thing I want to leave you with is, with anything in this brand space, whether it's logo or just your value proposition, in other words, why you should work with me, why I'm additive for you, all that, is show them, don't tell them. So saying like, I am sincere on the landing page of your website, I would see it as a red flag. Personally, I would look at your reviews. I'd see what people said about you. And the other thing you can do around that, and this is going to be the next episode, is, you know, generate what we call thought capital. Write on Substack, write on LinkedIn, write content, contribute to, you know, publications, create a podcast for that matter. And that way you're exploring the topic that lights you up and in which you have some degree of subject matter expertise. And then you just show people like, look, go read that stuff or go listen to that stuff. That's showing instead of telling. And I just think that that's super crucial in this space. And it'll get you a lot further than saying like, no, you understand. I really, really care about you and your energy body. It's like, okay, well, you and everybody else on planet Earth, I guess, minus the sociopaths. So I hope this helped you guys out. Yet another episode solo. I know, sorry. Eventually we will get other people on here. I am doing other interviews. We have a season 4 of the Skeptical Shaman podcast, you know, with, you know, other people, discussions, exploring spiritual topics, all of the above, well underway. But I just wanted to kind of get out this capsule collection around the business of woo. If you're curious about what I'm offering in terms of helping people with this, or you just want to read about it, you want to go look at some of the shit I've written, some of the other shit I've done, go to the show notes here, the links, click on it. Consultations for this stuff are free with me. And part of that consultation isn't me. It's not me selling you guys, because I have limited time. I have limited real estate in my calendar, basically. I'm actually really busy this year. It's been a great year for Totem. It's more about kind of finding out if it's a good fit, if this would even benefit you based on where you're at in your process. And by the way, that's another red flag, is if a provider doesn't say, hey, listen, you're not at a space where you can receive what I do, or it's not going to be additive for you. They're not honest with you about that. That's a problem, because good people that are good at what they do are busy enough that they don't need to lie and put a square peg in a round hole. And that counts for everything, not just brand work and not just, you know, consulting or mentoring or coaching or any of that shit. That's just a life truism. So business of woo, it's wild out there. It's weird. It's strange. It's great. It's fun. And until next time, take care.
Here at the Skeptical Showman podcast, we have a few sponsors that make all of these incredible conversations and discussions possible. Please take a moment to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Are you feeling disconnected from magic? Do you find yourself staring out the window in your nondescript workplace, wishing you were among the trees in the sunlight? Are you being slowly drained by your office energy vampire? You know the one. They won't stop talking about our cat. It's at the vet for the third time this month. Is the disembodied hand you purchased from a traveler acting up at night, opening drawers in your bedside table and disrupting your circadian rhythms? Well, Totem Flower Essences might be right for you. Purchase Totem Flower Essences on Etsy, and one drop of these magical potions can alchemically transmute your energy body, arming you with unmitigated powers of sorcery. Totem Flower Essences, be ungovernable. Totem Flower Essences are handmade by an emotionally unstable and morally dubious shaman, potentially injecting your life with raw chaos and magic and the attention of various pagan gods. Use responsibly.